You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later wherever you get your comics. Oh my gosh. Your podcasts. It's all good. You might be listening where you get your comics. I don't know.
Yeah, play this live, gang.
If you're a comic book shop that plays our podcast, please let me know. I hear that every once in a while, and I love hearing it. It's great.
It's nice.
Oh, that's nice. I hear they would love to play more in comic book shops, but I swear too much.
Yes. Right. You're a real stumbling block for our future success.
For a lot of reasons.
And they don't want comic book shops to become a den of iniquity, as you will.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's what Carmel. They say. That's what the cops say.
One of the other things the cops say is, hey, you have some great guests on the show tonight. So
they do say that. And if you're listening down at your local precinct, also hit us up. But I gotta tell you, that sounds crazy.
Use your one phone call. We'll answer.
Cops can call as many people as they want. It's the
my phone is never in airplane mode. Always available.
No. Cops actually only get one phone call over the course of their entire career.
Use it sparingly.
Yeah,
I ordered pizza on my first night.
No. Well, anyway, we have a great guest for you this evening. She's the creator of the new book, Raised by Ghosts, which is out now from Fantagraphics. Ladies and gentlemen, Brianna Lewinson.
Brianna, hey, welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Thanks for coming on. Very excited to talk about this book. As I mentioned, it is out now from Fantagraphics. It's an absolutely gorgeous book that is based in part on your real experience, but told, I thought, from reading it, in a really fascinating way. Can you give us, like, the capsule of the book? Like,
I agree that it's fascinating. So,
okay.
End of interview.
Yeah, and done. She's fascinating. Gist of the book. Yeah, it's about high school in the 90s.
All right.
And yeah, buddy. And it's sort of was born from writing notes, and that's sort of what the impetus I wanted to write a book about, writing notes and passing notes. Yeah.
Big thing in school.
Yeah, yeah. Did you guys write notes?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I was hoping to receive more notes than I
did. Getting a note was such a huge deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that sort of was the start of it. And so the book has note parts, it has vignettes of memories, and it's sort of all about that isolation you feel as a teenager and then sort of like finding connection.
Can you if the sort of impetus of the book was about passing notes, can you talk about why that was so important to being in school in the 90s?
Yes. I grew up in an analog time. I'm Gen Y. It's a big point of contention in my household, but I am between Gen X and Millennial in that little micro generation, the Oregon Trail generation. So we didn't have technology.
I think we're all there except for
So we didn't have any technology, and if you were not super excited to be an academic student, then it was a long day without writing notes. So we wrote notes all the time, and I saved all my notes.
Oh my god.
Why? Like, or what?
Oh, well, wait, say that nicer, Alex. Don't attack our guests like that.
First of all, how dare you? Shakespearean notes.
But I mean, that's like, that's such a big decision to be like, I'm going to keep all of these pieces of paper. Like, my son throws everything out all the time, and I'm constantly like, should we keep this maybe? Yeah. All right, whatever.
Yeah, the last vestige. I don't know why I saved it. And I have moved quite a bit in my life, and I like had all my stuff. No one was like saving it for me. So it's like, I literally carted it like all over the country, just these giant bags of notes.
Good for you.
And it's like, why'd I save them unless I was going to write a book about it? But they're literal. Sometimes they're just like scraps of paper, and sometimes they're intricately folded. I have like, I saved everything.
Well, yeah, the folding was a big part of it too.
Yeah. I have some diagrams in the back of the book, so you guys can practice.
Oh, nice. Smart.
Yeah.
And they did the whole like origami kind of like choose your own adventure type of stuff.
Can you say cootie catcher? Is that effective? That's, I feel like, what we call those.
That's the name. That's the name.
A band term. Yeah.
I feel like there was another name. Was it like Rochambeau, maybe, where I was from? Or
Rochambeau was more like a rock, paper, scissors where I was from. That? Oh, not going to do that motion again.
Fortune telling.
Sorry, we got it. We captured it.
Okay, great. Glad that's on the internet forever.
Sorry.
I did want to talk about the title a little bit, because one of the things that you're first struck by in the book is it's Raised by Ghosts, because the parents, at least on screen, aren't there or are always busy or out. I assume that was your real experience.
I kind of had a lot of, there's like several factors that played into that title. I actually had the title like very early on in the process. Usually it's always taken me to the end of writing something to give it a piece of title. But one of the reasons is, yes, like if you read the book, the parents and my sibling are always off screen. And it was that sort of latchkey vibe where like the parents did not care what we were doing. They did not care if we were entertained. It's like, get out of my face, like go do something with yourself. So that was sort of like part of it. And they were just really interested in their own lives. So it was a little bit of the feeling of like, just these ghosts somewhere in my house. And then also my parents were like really crazy hippies, like wild, not like we drive a Prius and eat carob, but like burn it to the ground, like very intense. Yeah. So I feel like I'm often like, I say I'm raised by wolves, because I'm like, I didn't know that was a social norm that you were supposed to be doing. I was raised by wolves. So
what's your Molotov cocktail recipe? You ask.
I can't share that, man. Come on. Don't test me. I would call myself like a red diaper baby, like for sure. That was the scene in the household. So that paired with the sort of feeling of just like living amongst these ghosts. And then my parents always, like, I was like, these guys don't have a long time on this earth. I don't think this is going to go well for them. And it didn't. And they're gone now. So they're also ghosts in that way. So,
wow.
Yeah, well, made a lot of bad choices.
So this is a little complicated way to ask it, but again, while I was reading the book, I was thinking about the idea of like being a kid at that age alone at home. And I know when I was that age, and also my daughter is about that age.
Yeah.
For me, it ruled. I was like, great, I'm home. That's fine. I'm good. Whatever.
Totally.
You can go wherever you want. But when you're reading the book, or at least for myself reading the book, I think it's a very different experience where there is an emptiness and a sadness that's going through there. So, I mean, what was it like for you then repeating this experience that I assume at least in part was like, cool, I'm alone, I can do whatever I want, and then giving it that artistic bent to the book?
No, I think that that is true. Like, I think there was, like, if you had asked me when I was 16, I'd be like, oh, my family is the best. Like, literally, they're perfect and nothing's wrong. Everything's amazing. And I think that was, like, obviously, like, a coping skill. Because as I was older, I was like, not everyone's house was like this. Wait a minute. But I think that I did enjoy, like, the time by myself. I feel like there was a lot of, like, exploration and just, like, being in my own world that I did really, really love. And then I think there also was a lot of this, like, sort of, like, isolated sadness. So I kind of want, that's what I wanted to try to get across in the book, is that there are both of these things happening at once. And I really love ambiguity, and I love things that don't line up perfectly. So for me, that's something that I always like to write about.
Well, especially when you have the source of the notes, which is like a direct artifact of that.
Yeah.
Time.
Yeah.
So you can be ambiguous. What was, so if you, was there a gap in time between you keeping the notes all this time and then coming back to read them for this project? And what was one of your amazing
high school last year?
Well, I mean, are you reading them like once or twice
a
year or something? Blowing dust off them and like, oh my God, what was I talking about?
Yeah, so my best friend in the book, Jacob, he is a cartoonist also, and we draw together every week via Zoom.
Cool.
He lives in New York. It is cool. I think at some point we had talked about maybe doing something together. I probably have looked at them at some point, but not in any in-depth way. It was quite a big.
Oh, no. Oh, whatever she was saying.
And then, yes, before I like, whoa, what's that?
Oh, we lost you for a second.
We lost you for a second, and then it sped up real fast and caught up. It was actually pretty cool.
Oh,
yeah, to be honest.
Okay, yeah, I did that on purpose.
Great job.
Let me ask you about the back and forth between you have the notes and then you have the things that are happening in real life, or eventually it goes in other directions there. But what kind of research did you have to do for that? Because like Justin was saying, you have the notes on hand. The other stuff, I assume, not directly, unless you're keeping very detailed journals as well.
Yes, I did not have very detailed journals. There was a lot of research into the setting. So my previous book that I did a couple of years ago with Fantagraphics was also a memoir, but it was set in like a total dream world. So it didn't look like me. It didn't look like where I grew up. I put it in this total sort of like fantasy dream vibe. And then I kind of wanted to do the opposite for this, where I wanted it to look like every classroom is exact classroom and every street corner. Like I spent a lot of time on Google Maps going as far back as I could and trying to remember old paint colors of the houses and like what I had in my room or what other people had or clothes that we actually wore, like the actual outfits. So I did a lot. And my high school where it's set has been completely demolished and rebuilt. So I couldn't just like go look at it. There was a lot of trying to find all of that. So that was a lot of research, which was very fun to delve into.
Was this a helpful process? Was this kind of a nightmare to relive this? And I would be kind of scared to read old notes that I'd written and kind of stuff like that. How was this?
Right. So I only have the notes that were given to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that makes it easy. I have one journal that spans freshman year to senior year. So it's like only every couple months. So it is just a true horror show. Just the worst thing. It makes me feel absolutely shamed and terrible about myself. But it's helpful because I think that what I wanted to also show is just that narcissism of being a teenager. You know, this is like a book for teenagers. I'm a high school teacher. I love teenagers. I have big empathy for that age group. But also it's like, you are just all about your own deal. What is life for you? So that journal was like helpful also that it's short. It's not like I had 18 journals that I had to like, I don't think I could do that to your point. Just one sweet little shit show.
Well, so last week on the show, we also had a teacher who had just released a graphic novel, and we talked to him about what his students felt about it and if they knew about it at all. Mm-hmm. So same question to you then. Do they know about your graphic novel work? What's the reaction, if so?
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty excited about it. So I teach art, so kids are pretty into it. Yeah, it's fun. I teach a lot of ceramics classes, so those kids don't know that I draw. And I'm like, yeah, that's actually like mostly what I do. I was out for a book tour last week, so I was gone. So today when I was back, they were like, you're back. Like, how did it go? And they're all so excited about it. And it's very cute. Yeah. I mean, the book has only been out. It came out like 1 week ago today. So it has not been out long, but they are very excited about it. One student said, do you have any copies left? And I was like, well, I don't, but you can buy it. And then she was like, it's on Amazon. Like she couldn't even get it.
I have a 90s style question about ceramics as a follow-up there. Do you still make ashtrays?
Oh, no. And I have to, they sometimes make things that look like ashtrays. And I have to say, this looks too much like an ashtray. I don't want to get in trouble with the administration for promoting smoking. Can you
have to smash
add more?
It with a hammer.
I had some things I've had to smash with hammers.
Because back in the day, that was a great go-to of once you ruined whatever it was, you could always go ashtray.
Make it an ashtray.
Ashtray.
yep. we
kind
can't
get out of jail free. Yeah, yeah.
To very lightly talk about towards the end of the book, just because I was really floored by that in particular, it opens up the art in a vague way and starts to break the format. Again, I'm bouncing around it because the book just came out a week ago, so I don't know how much you want to talk about necessarily, but what was your inspiration there for that section, and what was it like tackling that, breaking the format that you had set up for, I don't know, the first two-thirds of the book or so?
Yeah, so the whole book is sort of in this very, like, deconstructed manner. So it's like a vignette of comic panels, and it's usually four panels to a page. They're squares. It's very staccato, like very unorganic feeling. And then there's a note, and then there's like some more images, and then a note just for people who haven't read the book. I like setting up that kind of rhythm. And then I am a little bit of just a little rebel heart. And so I was like, well, I want to break that rhythm. So I wanted to think of some way that would just completely disrupt what I had just set up to be like, this is how this book reads. So that's why I opted for like the inverse colors and the full bleed. And what I wanted to do was like sort of show that those panels are very structured and isolated and like in their own little boxes. And then I wanted to do the opposite, which is like a flood of emotion and a flood of color and a flood of feeling, or not of color, but of saturation or darkness. I don't know what you call it. and so I wanted to like just like full, that was the way that I thought of that, would like fully break that, what I had just set up. That was sort of what.
Well, it's a wonderful section and a wonderful book. Before we start to wrap up here, obviously this just came out, but is there anything else you want to plug? Anything else people should check out from you?
Well, I definitely think everyone should buy this book because I think it's pretty good.
Yeah,
it's very good.
Yeah, just to quickly kind of compliment you, thank you so much for opening up and sharing so much. This was such a nostalgic read and also nice to kind of... for you to be so open.
Yeah, I am a little bit. Now that it's out, I'm like, ooh, did I want to do this? quick to make a decision and then later be like, ooh, that's a weird choice. So thank you. I hope that I continue to feel positive about it. but I had a book that came out a couple years ago called Ephemera. I really feel like that's a great book if people haven't read it. So I plug that. And I've been doing a series for KQED, and I'm from the Bay Area in California, and about different establishments that have closed. So I did a series on cafes that have closed and movie theaters that have closed, and just sort of celebrating these things that we don't have anymore. And it's in the same style as Raised by Ghosts. So it's like a one memory and then a note that accompanies it. So check that out. Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Well, that's great. Brianna, congratulations on the book. It is utterly fantastic. And thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for
chatting. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. This is so fun. You guys are great.
So good.
Thanks, Brianna. All right. See you, Brianna. Have a good evening.
Bye.
All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Raised by Ghosts. It is out now from Fantagraphics, and it is phenomenal. Definitely go pick it up.
Now, you feel like as Brown is a teacher, like if she sees someone passing a note in class, is she like, I'll allow it?
Yeah, you got to allow
it. You keep them, and that's your next book.
That's the next book.
You take them.
Black marketing.
That's how it works, right? You take other people's ideas. And then
they're artifacts.
Yeah, okay. That's what you do.
Yes.
Right, Alex?
I'm basically like a human AI. It's pretty cool. All right. Why don't we bring in our...
I always thought that.
Next guest. He is the writer behind the new The Herculoids from Dynamite, coming out later this month. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Snegowski.
Hey, welcome. Hello. How are you?
So good. So excited to chat about this. Though, full disclosure, despite the fact... that I love this book, I had no relationship personally with Hercules before.
We were shocked when he admitted this.
Wow.
It's amazing. I know, I'm sorry. So I'm going to turn it over for questions just to start to Pete, who seems very excited about this. Pete.
We're mad at you.
Yeah, first off, thank you so much for creating this. I didn't know how much I missed the Herculoids until I got to go back via this comic. This was such a blast and such a fun time. How was it for you to kind of be able to go back and give us a taste of something we haven't had in a long time?
I've said this like a million times. I'm sounding like a broken record, but I can remember starting in comics and just getting like my first gigs and asking editors, who's got the Herculoids?
Wow. Yeah.
Who's got the Herculoids? Who's and they would look at me like, I don't know. I don't care. And then it usually was like, Warner Brothers, so maybe DC. But I would always sniffing around it. And I could never quite nail a person to talk to or, you know, anybody that might listen to my stupid ideas. or anything like that. So,
well, like for me, Herculoids was always like the most like exotic cartoon, and it always felt like it just came on. Like it was because it wasn't a part of USA Cartoon Express. I want to say maybe.
I see. The scary thing is, I remember 1967 when it first aired.
Oh, yeah, wow. Right.
I was 5.
So yeah, you're catching them. Well, we're catching them like a few years later. So it's sort of like it was always like, oh, this one is on. I love this one. I can't believe I'm here to witness it.
Yeah.
So what is it about the Herculoids that is that sort of? Why does it pop?
I don't.
It pop back then?
I think the main thing that pops about it is the visual. These characters like get into your eyeballs and burrow into your brain.
Yeah.
And it's the Alex Toth designs. He designed the whole show. So, I mean, that's what I carried away from watching the episodes as a kid. They never left my head. They were always there. I was a monster kid from the beginning, but these guys were always in there somewhere, rattling around. But yeah, I think it's the visuals. I think the design of, you know, Egu, the rock ape. I mean, Christ, it's a rock ape.
Yeah, come on. Egu's the best.
Yeah. It's a giant ape made of rock. Come on.
Cool. I guess it really is. It's like every character has two awesome adjectives or descriptors, I should say, like rock, ape.
Yeah.
Gloop, guy.
Don't forget Gleep, bro. Come on.
Yeah, Gleep.
Tundro.
Yeah.
Well, so let's talk about the approach here a little bit, because this is part of a bigger line that Dynamite's been doing, bringing back a lot of properties. And I think we've kind of seen them go two different ways. One is just like a very faithful rendition of the thing.
Right.
The other one is a broad revamp of the property. What was your take on it? What did you want to do? And how did this
end up? It's funny. I loved what David Peepos was doing with Space Ghost.
Yeah, the Peepos.
But at the same time, I didn't think I should go that far with the Herculoids. And it honestly didn't seem like Warner Brothers wanted to go that far with the Herculoids. So I kind of went down the middle. I kind of give people what they are looking for, a little bit like that nostalgia feeling. But I think I'm taking it a little further because, I mean, most of the episodes were pretty much the same story over and over. You know what I mean? There were all kinds of questions that would rattle around in my brain when I would watch them, especially when I was rewatching them. And I was like, all right, why? There were all kinds of whys about why this planet, why these characters, why are they together? So I kind of used that as my propulsion for taking something kind of familiar, presenting something kind of familiar, but then leading the audience down a path to like, all right, we've been here, let's go down here now.
Well, and I feel like in the issue, you do let them sort of sneak up on us. You know, we're not like hanging out with them for a bit.
I think that was probably like, was so fun to set up because, you know, there isn't anything better in a movie than to be like waiting for the monster, or waiting for the T-Rex, or waiting for James Bond to come in the room. I mean, it's like that anticipation, that building that anticipation of. So that was what I wanted to do with the first issue.
You nailed it, man. I loved it. You had this like roll call. And then like by the end, I was fired up, man. I was so excited.
Well, as the person on the podcast who was not quite as familiar with the cartoon, the thing that I really enjoyed about it is it's you on the writing. It's Craig Russo on the art. You're such a great team anyway, but I'm a fan of the work that you've done on the Mignolaverse and the Hellboy and the BPRD books and everything. And this feels like this that fits right in there in terms of the pacing and the feel, but in space.
I mean, well, you got you got monsters. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's kind of like when you're playing in the Mignolaverse, that's kind of like you 99% of the time you've got some monster in the storyline somewhere. So I kind of I can't say that I wrote the same way that I would write a Mignola book. Cause you have to be in a very specific frame of mind. The mic comes after. Sure.
Some yeah. questions about that.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I wrote for Craig also. I think that, that visual aspect was really there too. Cause I knew what he could do. So I was kind of like, all right, how can I give people, you know, like that nostalgic feeling, but also have the visual be something that they haven't quite seen before or something that kind of takes them a little bit forward and then with where they're used to being. So yeah, it was, he's great. I love Craig.
Oh yeah, the art's unbelievable.
Well,
yeah.
It's really nice. It sort of evokes the cartoon.
Yeah.
Putting it fully in comic book form.
And yeah.
Even all the new characters, or at least not the main characters that we meet at the beginning of the book, sort of the art's there. So you're like, hell yes, I'm here for whatever these guys are talking about.
Well, he was all, every time I talked to Craig, he had Alex Toth books out.
Yeah, right.
So he was designing and thinking like Toth for the look of the book, which I was tickled about. I was all excited about that.
We've been kind of touching on this anyway, but our chat has been really blowing up with Herculoids fans and people excited about this book.
Oh, cool.
Why do you think it has had this lasting appeal? I mean, I know we've kind of touched on this anyway, but
I mean, for me, it's always been about loving monsters even as a little kid and having these awesome looking creatures, but they're good guys. So
yeah,
I think it made it a little bit kind of cooler because it was almost like, yeah, my first like introduction into like a superhero group. Cause I don't think I was into comics yet. I mean, at five, I was probably aware of like Spider-Man or something like that at that point. But I think this was probably like my introduction to like the team of cool looking things.
For me, it was like sort of a family with the monsters, and they were all like working together. I was like, oh yes, my dream.
It's
just monster pets. Also, it's like a cool family plus dinosaurs plus space. I'm like, well, there's all my interests currently.
And Hercules, you never knew what you were going to see. They were like robots and giant ants, and they were spider people, and they were flying apes, and I mean, like everything
in the animated show, like you said earlier, it was very spare with like what was happening with all this. Like, why was any of this going on? They were like, we don't want to tell you that.
We don't.
It's a very toy box show where it's like, dump. What is this? You guys figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, then following up on that, as a writer who is coming back and is tackling this, is that something that you want to flesh out? Do you want to explore more of what these characters are and where they come from, or do you want to continue to leave that spare?
I think what I do in like the first two issues, I kind of introduce like the whole concept of why people come to this planet. The fact that it's almost like legendary, it's like paradise that, you know, and everybody's looking for it. But as the stories go on, I introduce an element that is from the past that's going to connect to what this is all about, who the Herculoids are, where they come from.
Great.
And I don't want to get too much away, but
please don't. And are we going to get a dark, gritty Gloop spinoff?
Dark Gloop.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Dark Loop, I do want to mention that every week on the show, we have a cocktail that is either curated or created by a chef down in New Orleans named Brett Macris. He works at a place called
Stray Bullies.
100% true. And this week he made a cocktail called Is That One Gloop or Gleep?
Oh, that's a riot.
It's vodka, brandy, orange liqueur, orange juice, almond orge. How do you pronounce that, Justin?
Orgeat.
Whole milk, sea salt or kosher salt, and a small pinch of nutmeg.
Oh, you have to send me this. I want to try that.
For sure. And like this, you got to have your full ingredients, but he was talking about it earlier, and it's fully like the consistency and
of Gloop and
color
Gleep.
Of Gloop. Yeah, it's Gloop. It's glute presenting cocktail.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah, you definitely have to send that to me. That's great.
For sure. We got a question here. I don't know if this is a serious one, but I'm going to bring it up anyway, from Matt Towson. Are the Herculoids demons? Can you answer that?
No, the Herculoids are not demons. There's actually no supernatural stuff in this, which is really unusual for me. And I don't bring in the Catholic Church, which makes it even...
Come on!
Almost everything that I write has the Catholic Church in it, but no, this does not. This is just good old-fashioned intergalactic monsters and spaceships and
awesome.
We got another one here. This is from Easy Reader. Says, are we going to be able to understand what Gloop and Gleep say?
No, but you'll understand what they're saying by the responses that the humans give them.
So, like the
cartoon. The humans completely understand all of them.
Of course,
but we'll just get their grunts and their moans and their.
So much moment.
Next up, we have a very personal question from the chat. Uh-oh. Stray Bullet, who created the drink, would like to know, what is that cocktail Tom is drinking?
This is water.
Oh.
It's water in a Herculoids glass.
Nice. Wow. All right.
Yeah. All right. And you can buy that somewhere at like a...
I got it on eBay, I think.
Nice. Oh,
that's cool. That's a dig. Water not included.
Yeah. Water not included, no.
Now, I do want to ask you about something entirely different, and maybe because back in the day, you wrote a bunch of Buffy and Angel novels. Recently, it came out that Sarah Michelle Gellar is working on a new Buffy show for Hulu. What was your reaction to that?
I kind of could see the writing on the wall. It seemed like we were heading in this direction. We just didn't know when, you know?
Right. Cool.
You could kind of get a sense that the whole reboot thing was getting popular with other things. So it was inevitable that it was going to get
a matter of time. Yeah.
But it was going to get to Buffy. Yeah.
There was some writing I saw somewhere about your Buffy and Angel novels that said you worked on them as an unpaid intern. Is that?
I worked on them as a writer.
That didn't seem correct.
Yeah. That was the Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the monster book, was my first novel, but it was, it wasn't fiction. It was, it was pop culture history of all the monsters on the show that I did with Chris Golden, Steve Bissett, and myself. So that was my first foray into publishing, and I hated it. because I've been doing comics, and suddenly I'm doing this. Yeah. I did not like it at all. And then the editor on that book tricked me into writing an Angel novel because they had just got the Angel, the spinoff from Buffy. Yeah. They got that, and I must have been simple, but I got completely tricked into writing that book.
I love that trick. At what point did you realize? It's like when you like take your dog to the vet and you have to like trick him into getting in the car.
You know, it was kind of like that. It was one of those things. I turned in the monster book with Steve and Chris, and the editor was like, "Hey, we just got Angel," and I was like, "Oh yeah," and she says, "If you were going to do an Angel book," and I'm like, "I'm not." She goes, no, I'm just curious.
It's hypothetical.
Completely hypothetical. Yeah. If you were going to do it, what would you do? Just like off the top of your head, write a couple of things down. And like an idiot, I do. Not thinking in any way, shape, or form it means anything. For one thing, I didn't really have a writing career in books yet. I just had a comic career. So I did that, and then she comes back to me and she says, "Oh, this first one is really interesting."
If you were hypothetically writing an outline for a book about this first idea, what would it look like?
What would you do? Where would it go? And I'm like, so like an idiot, I give her more, and I give it to her, and I hear nothing. Forget all about it. And all of a sudden, I get a call from her telling me my deadline.
That's great.
She's like, "Oh, that's... your deadline is July 16th. And I'm like, "What are you talking about?"
That's when the vet jams the shot into your dog.
So are you, with the show coming back, are you at all worried she's going to trick you into more?
No, she's no longer in editing. So there's a whole other.
That could happen. It's a long con though. She's like, oh, I'm not in editing anymore. Yeah. I'm just going to come over to your house and suggest some books for no reason. back to Herculoids though. So the first issue does come out on February 19th from Dynamite. What can we expect for the first couple of issues? We read the first one, but for anybody listening,
So you guys have read the first.
Yes. Oh man, so good. Cool. So good.
I don't know who's seen it and who hasn't seen it. I used the first two issues to kind of like just introduce the concepts and the characters and maybe like stir up some questions. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I kind of do those kind of one and done storylines.
Oh, great. Oh,
great.
But at the same time, with a trace element that kind of like by the end of issue two, there's something that I introduce right at the end of the book that gets bigger and bigger as the stories go along. So it's kind of going on in the background. And then it becomes the major plot element that'll take us to the end of. To the first year, so end of 12. So hopefully, I'll get a second year. That'd be great.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Getting 12 is awesome, though. Just get to really get.
Yeah. Hopefully.
And I love that you're doing like standalone stories rather than something heavy serialized, because I feel like that's getting back to what it felt like.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, I think issue three is pretty much a standalone. And issue four is pretty much standalone. I get to, you know what I'm doing, which I freaking love. I'm getting a chance to do stories that focus on one of the creatures.
Yes. Oh, great.
So I'm giving you like information about these creatures that you didn't know.
Yes.
So there's like a Zoc issue and an Igu issue. So, yeah.
I will say I'd be hard for, if someone was like, what do you know about Igu? I was like, well, not a lot. So I'm ready.
That's my favorite one. That's the one.
Igu is your guy?
Yeah, that's the one. Nice. That I had a like it was like a brainstorm. I was like, oh my god, that's so awesome. Cool. Yeah, so hopefully they don't say you can't do that.
Well, I'm excited to check out. Before we let you go, though, anything else you want to plug?
Let me see. I got a new novella coming out through Bad Hand Books with my writing partner, Janine Atchison. I did a bunch of Vampirella stuff with her called Nera. And it's the first of a urban fantasy series that we're going to be doing. Cool. And also, with the same publisher, I wrote a book in 2017 with Mignola called Grim Death and Bill the Electrocuted Criminal.
Right.
We're doing new Grim Death stories with this publisher, too. So it's me, Mike, and Janine are going to be doing some brand new pulp Grim Death stories, too.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome. That's super exciting.
Yeah. Well, cool. Tom, congratulations on everything. Yeah, excited to read more Herculoids. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
I look forward to hearing how you'll be tricked into doing more work.
Ain't too bright.
Thanks, Tom. Have a great night.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there we go. Man. Once again, the book is Herculoids. So it's coming out February 19th from Dynamite. So tell your comic book shop you would like to order it now.
Oh, man, you got to check out. First issue's a banger.
Whether you're a Herculoids fan like these guys or not a Herculoids fan like me, you will become one by the end of the first issue. That's how good it is.
Definitely. And it just, like, we talk a lot about nostalgia and feeling nostalgia reading anything. This one really hit me. It really, like,
really
snapped me. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
All right, why don't we move on to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments down on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitch, and we will get to them. But why don't we talk about what you guys are drinking while we're waiting for that? Justin, what do you got going on?
I'm drinking a little classic Brooklyn Pilsner.
Crisp.
It's a crisp.
Crisp.
Yeah. And Pete, garage beer.
Garage beer. Yep.
How much of that do you buy at a time, Pete?
Case at a time, bro. Case at a time.
You only drink like one every Tuesday? Is that what you do? Like a special little treat?
Well, this weekend was the Super Bowl, so a couple got away from me. But yeah, you know.
And a couple got away. And we'll have a full 2-hour breakdown of the play-by-play of the Super Bowl. I think, Alex, you wanted to do that.
Yeah,
for sure. The Kansas City Chiefs. What a heartbreaker.
Wow. Just not nailing it. You're a classically trained actor? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
All right, we got a couple of questions here already. This is from Michael Tillman. Can't recall if you mentioned it, but have you had a chance to watch or have thoughts about Here on Netflix? Here is the movie that came out late last year. It's actually based on a graphic novel, or at least a short comic book story. It was directed, this one was Robert Zemeckis. Okay, I get Robert Zemeckis and Chris Columbus mixed up for whatever reason.
How dare you?
I know, I'm so sorry.
Forrest Gump.
Stars Tom Hanks, and it's all from a fixed perspective. Highly recommend reading the comic, which is fantastic, period.
You watch the movie and don't like it?
No, but I saw the trailer, and like one of the joys of the comic book is it does all of the, I mean, in the simplest way of explaining it, but like it's panel and panel stuff. Like the thing is the juxtaposition of you're watching millions of years ago inset with something that's happening in the 1920s, and then over here is something happening in the 50s, and it's cool. I don't know if they did that in the movie, but it certainly didn't seem like that.
Well, no, there's not. It's just the camera is just going from this once the camera doesn't move, world changes in front of it. And you know, it's a little dusty, but it is, Zemeckis still has, like, it's a big experiment from someone who is a huge filmmaker for 40 years or something. So it's worth a watch. I'll say that. I think it's worth a watch, even though it's, you can point at some maybe not great things about it as you're watching.
There you go. This is from Schoikler. What was the wildest prediction you made after seeing a trailer that turned out to be true? I probably said this on here, but that Bruce Willis was dead the whole time in The Sixth Sense.
You did not call that. No, you did not. You did not.
You saw the trailer.
You can't do that. You can't say something like that.
I did. I remember very specifically seeing
it. Dude, that movie came out in like the 90s. We weren't around. There was nobody recording.
We weren't around.
We weren't doing a podcast, making hot predictions and having
it
recording.
Doesn't say what was the wild. I made predictions before we were on a podcast, Pete. Before we had a podcast, I was shouting stuff into the woods and then pausing to let two other people talk.
Yeah.
They never did.
You a squirrel they and never duck did this podcast.
Duck had some pretty racist opinions.
Can't trust
the duck
those
was
ducks.
Pete. Pete was the duck.
Darkling, you can't trust those ducks.
They called him. I knew the head was in the box that had a head in it, obviously, just from watching Seven.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Just a trailer from Seven. It's hard to call a prediction. We've definitely been making some predictions about the Fantastic Four trailer, perhaps where Schoikler's question comes from. But this makes me want to talk about the Marvel trailers and perhaps new perceptions. We were ranking them in the Patreon Discord. So what do we think?
Based on the new Thunderbolts trailer that came out.
Thunderbolts Cap coming out this weekend. And, of course, Fantastic Four.
Well, and I think what you're responding to, just to keep going through Discord conversations, is I said after the Thunderbolts trailer dropped at the Super Bowl that I think that is going to be the best MCU movie that comes out this year.
That's my take. I hope so.
Interesting. And my take was that Fantastic Four is going to be the best, but my perhaps more aggressive and more dangerous take is I think they're all three, including Cap, are going to be pretty good.
Whoa! They're going to be pretty good. Okay! Ooh. Wow, back on the MCU train.
All right. Be, and let me just say, Cap is the least likely to be good, but I think it's going to be better than the last few.
Mm. Huh.
Huh. Pete, what about you? What based on the trailers, wild prediction?
I don't know. I'm not smart enough for stuff like that.
Not smart enough to say what you're excited
to have your
for?
Opinion?
No, I'm not smart enough to be like, oh, they're the murderer. I can tell from the trailer.
Asked you what of three MCU of three movies are you most excited for based on the trailers?
Which one's going to be the best?
I'm nervously excited for Cap. I do think Thunderbolts is going to be great. Just because that team is so fun individually that I'm hoping as a group will be even more fun. And then what's the third one?
Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about that at all.
Sorry, we got to get that duck back on the podcast.
Yeah, I'd rather
I'd rather see a Doom movie than retreading another fucking Fantastic Four.
Doom? Do you mean based on the video game? The movie with Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
No, but,
great. To Schreckler answers his own question, which this was amazing. I still remember the time in Slack, as a joke, I predicted the Dingbats of Danger Street. This was a truly amazing prediction.
That's why Schreckler was.
And that wasn't for a trailer. That was.
He was like, hey,
Tom King's.
Yeah, I was like, there's a wild, crazy Tom King unannounced project. He was like, what is it? Dingbats of Danger Street? I was like, what are you?
That's an insane call. Yeah. Edward Doherty also says, I guess the twist of Comic Book Club before anyone else, Pete and Justin are brothers. Wow.
Jedi married, not brothers, but I appreciate
it. Both. It's pretty fucked up. Frederica Rosa says, who is a character you think should get into a long-term relationship such as Lois and Clark, and is there any you think should never be in one? Great question.
I love this question, and
I
know what you're going to say,
I just want to throw out a prediction for the trailer of this is... somebody's going to be screaming at us by the end of this conversation. Okay, go ahead, Justin.
You mean one of us in this
group? In this.
Somebody? Slack. You made it sound like we don't know who the person is.
We don't know who it is.
We don't know who it is. It could be anybody.
It's up in the air.
I think...
I know what you're going to say.
Well, I want to...
You're going to say Tony Stark and the Ice Queen.
The White Queen. Yes, that's a great call. But I was actually going to say Peter Parker and Black Cat. My other hobby horse. But I did want to say this is especially apt because there's a series out right now where Cable is falling in love. I think the second issue maybe comes out tomorrow. But I love that as an idea. The first issue is such a refreshing idea to introduce this hardened character with a real emotion. And that is I want more of this in general.
Yeah, more people in relationships. That's lovely. I agree.
But what are your relationships or anti-relationships?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I do think it would be fun. That's what I loved about the MJ and Peter relationship is just the fact that they both had so much going on and it was so hard, yet they still made it work. And it was too bad Marvel gave up on them.
So you want to? Your prediction or your interest in relationship is one you've seen for hundreds of issues already.
And I want them to bring it back because it's bullshit that it's not going on anymore.
I conversely, and I know this is like stepping on hot coals or whatever it is, but I think the instinct to say Peter Parker should always be single is a correct one. But they already screwed it up, and they haven't, like we talked about here before on the podcast. Once they have made him single, they haven't really done anything with it.
Well, yes. And it's just funny. I feel like Peter Parker over the years, his hardships have gotten so heightened. When the character initially was like, the hardship was regular life and the superhero stuff was going well. And I think that's the magic formula. Like he should be like having a hard time in regular stuff, but still doing it. And not just like being like, oh no, I've experienced 20 million deaths.
Well, but on the opposite end of the spectrum, they got to find a new mode for him having hardship in his life other than I am always late to everything. Because the only mode is him being late and then being like, Peter, you're always late. Well, now I'm mad at you. And that's it.
But also everyone, all of his loved ones are mad at him, but then also forgive him immediately. And I'm like, what is this?
Yeah,
this is just annoying to me, the reader.
And in terms of characters that I don't think should be in a long-term relationship, I was trying to think through, And I think the only ones or the first ones that came to mind were Jean Grey and Cyclops, who I just think are so boring together.
Agreed, 100%.
That's all.
But what about that thruple with Wolverine?
Interesting.
I think the couple I want to see together is Pete and Amber from Invincible, most of all.
Because
that would make
that
him
too.
Happy.
Pete, what are your prospects for dating a animated character?
Hey, I'm open. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
There's a lot of people who do that. They have these big pillows they sleep with, and it's very
That's
nice.
Not an animated character. That's a pillow.
It's like an anime pillow.
If any of us are going to fall into a Who Framed Roger Rabbit situation, it's Pete. Yeah.
All right, this is from Edward Doherty. Does Pete have any other secret activities besides the secret quiz, a secret dance-off, a secret stand-up special?
Great question. Ooh. The answer is definitely
yeah, because yeah. Possibly, yeah. Pete?
Well, I had a secret one-man show that used to be available online, but now isn't. So, but
I
yeah.
saw it in person and I cried.
Oh, thanks, man. That's lovely.
Thank you.
You cried because it was good, right? It wasn't like you cried because you were like, oh, man, yeah. This was a piece of shit.
Yeah, I said he failed me. He failed me for the last time over and over again. No, I cried because it was great. It was really, like, revealing and open. It was and funny and just great, yeah.
Well, thanks, man.
Schoikler, as a follow-up, says, I'd like to take the secret quiz, password Bruce Lee.
Oh, man. He didn't pause there where I say, okay, what's the password? And then he says Bruce Lee. What's great about that, Schoikler, is that's half of the password. There's another part to the password you're so close to getting. It's right next to Bruce. I don't know if you can see it there, but...
really?
Really?
You're crazy.
Close.
Wait,
it's really
close. Pete, can you turn it back and I'll put you up at the solo layout so people actually have the chance, or is that too much?
Okay,
it's
sure.
It's crazy how hard you've made this and also easy.
Yeah, well, that's the craziest part is right there. If you can
what
figure out...
What is that? I cannot figure
you can't, it out. You can't even figure it out. Oh,
I believe
man.
That... Is that your own obituary? Is that what you
no.
just pointed to?
No, it is not.
It's that's your only
old hot seat article from Time Out New York back in the day about one of my favorite New Yorkers.
Oh, Mayor de Blasio.
No, jeez, okay. No.
Stray Bullet says, a few weeks ago, we all went out to East New Orleans to grab some French rolls and some really good banh mi. It almost killed Pete. Given the choice, what sandwich would you want to take you out?
Oh, that's a great question.
Murdered by sandwich.
Oh, if you're going to go out by a sandwich, how do you want to do it?
I've never heard a more Pete-coded question.
Yeah. While you're thinking about it, I'll throw out two options from my end. First instinct was an Italian hoagie, just because that's one of my favorite sandwiches to get from a deli. The other one, though, is when I was in France for our honeymoon with my wife, we stopped at this place called Le Maison Truffe in Paris, and obviously they have, like, all truffle stuff, and they just had, like, I think it was just truffle sausage on butter on a baguette, and that was it.
What?
And we took it to the lawn outside the Louvre and sat down and ate it and, like, almost died. It was so good.
Yeah, so you did almost die
yeah.
from a sandwich. Well,
it's interesting Stray Bullet, I went there. So good. Interesting you want to die by eating something lovely and amazing. So you were, like... choke on your
die family. Of happiness. You would die of just pure
yeah,
joy.
If you're given the choice, you would die eating something terrible.
Yeah, know, is like, that what you're saying?
No. I have the no, choice. I'm gonna eat garbage like a raccoon.
Yeah.
No, that's you're missing the point. It's you're choosing quality and I'm choosing quantity. I would want to die eating like a 20-foot sub, drowning in the meat that I love.
Wow. Well, what there's kind of 20-foot sub?
Upstate chain, Drek Subs, Jreck, shouts. They do roast beef, cheddar. They have a red pepper spread that is undefeated. So ooh. Roast beef, Drek subs. Give me a 20-footer. I'll take that down and I'll die. I'll lay down in my grave and just throw the sub in on top of me.
Wow. Well, that brings up a good point. If I want to do it, I want to kind of do it the old Popeye cartoon style, where it's just like this giant sandwich that I'm kind of working my way down. And they would, you know, I would want to kind of die, I guess, on the meatball sub part. You know what I mean? Like the last bite is what kills me after I like eat through an Italian it. And, you know, like a.
And that's what you're trying to do cutlet. Before every show at Subway.
Yeah, I got bad news, Pete. I talked to your doctor, and if you eat one more Subway meatball sub, you will die.
Yeah, well, I haven't eaten Subway in a long ass time. But yeah, I do love meatball subs. But why we're shouting out places. I would have to say a beef on whack would be a great way to go. Go up to Buffalo, get yourself a beef on whack. I'm a sucker for a French dip. There's this place in Ithaca. I don't know if you've ever been there, Alex. It was called Bench Warmers. And they used to have on a hoagie roll, it was grilled chicken. And then they did blue cheese and kind of the... A wing sauce, and oh man, it was just absolutely delicious.
That's good. Edward Doherty has a comment that will maybe change your life, Pete.
Okay.
Do they make a garbage plate sandwich?
Oh,
Pete,
God.
This could be your business. This could be your future.
Well, that would be that. In Chicago, I went to a place that was like where they would stuff everything in this sandwich. It was like fries and all sorts of stuff. So they do have stuff like that, but I've never seen like a garbage plate because they do give you two slices of French bread to kind of mop up as you go.
It's already almost a sandwich.
Yeah.
Do you know where no one has the balls to put it together.
Do you know where that would be a big hit, Pete? I'm just going to throw it out to you is in New Orleans. So if you moved down to New Orleans and opened up a garbage plate sandwich shop, that would kill.
I would do nothing that would take away what business you should do from is stray
open it
bullies.
Open it across the street from Shift, and you shut them down.
No way, man. I shut do nothing down. But support Shift. I would never take anything away from Shift. They are the greatest.
Jared Slint says, not a question, but after last week's show, I found Justin's Comcast commercial with Jane Lynch on YouTube. True masterpiece.
Can hear my voice. I'm saying the deal. It's great stuff.
Edward Doherty says, what are your top 100 comics of 2025?
Oh, boy.
We'll skip past that. Fredrico
listen
Rosa
to,
says...
Listen to, like, two episodes of The Stack.
Fredrico Rosa says, any last predictions about Brave New World? Maybe wild wishes that you go wild if turned true? I will mention I saw it this morning, so I'll recuse
I didn't know
myself.
If you were going to say, because you did say it when we were literally talking about it.
I'll recuse myself from it. But what are you guys, you have any final predictions for the
only
Captain
thing
America?
That I, my wild
And I'll
wish,
let you know whether they're true or not, so go ahead.
Please do.
Oh my God.
My only wild wish for this movie is that they keep it simple. They don't make it a mess like so many of the Marvel movies. Let's just have some fun. Let's have some S.H.I.E.L.D. and some Hulk, and let's tell a little story, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, let's have some fun. That's what made Marvel movies great. That's what Iron Man started, a fun movie that didn't take itself too seriously, although got serious at times. But, man, I don't know, man. I'm very nervous about it, but I hope it does well.
See, it's tracking very well at the box office, and that's the most important.
How is it already in the box office?
It's tracking. Tracking is predictions for the weekend. It's actually not tracking that great, but it's tracking fine. So
yeah, it's tracking fine. And honestly, that's a win.
Yep. There you go. It's not DC level, I guess we'll say. Hartford 1988 says, what's a comic run you like but the other two don't care for?
Ooh, great question.
Wow.
I feel like there's been one that I've been liking that you two are just way out on lately.
Well, I mean, recently we cut the Flash from the stack and you got annoyed about that. I like the Flash, but I have
a hard time. You used to be the Flash guy.
I know. I just have a hard time holding on to the story, but I really like the art and the lettering and everything.
The art and the lettering?
Yeah,
cool. Very cool.
I mean, when we first started doing this, you guys would give me shit about all the Hulk and Punisher stuff. I was always trying to get on the stack.
Yeah, but now we've come around.
Yeah. There was something. I mean, there's been several things for sure, Pete, that you've been like, what? Oh, you really like Blood Hunt.
We haven't. Oh, I love.
Should we talk about this?
We were out on the hunt.
Yes, Pete. I do feel bad about this. We. Accidentally, I mean, I certainly didn't mean it, tricked Pete into thinking that we all like Blood Hunt. because we were shouting the Blood Hunt at the beginning, and you took that to mean we liked it. When I'll speak for myself, I was like, yeah, this is all right.
I was all about it.
Yeah. I'm just hoping we get to hear more from Varney, you know, the villain.
Yeah, you know, Varney.
Yeah, yeah. And we could all say, like, you know, one sentence about Varney right now, because he was such an effective villain.
He's a big purple vampire. I know that.
Yeah people, what'd you say about Varney? Oh,
very old vampire, you know, has been through a lot, seen a lot.
Terrifying.
You know? Yeah.
Aging is terrifying, so.
Agreed.
I will say, I feel like Crave is one that I liked and you guys were out on pretty effectively.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I think that was the Maria Lovett one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I think it fizzled out a little bit by the end for me, but I still like her stuff. All right, well, what about this? Stray Bullet says, is there any of the ultimate or absolute alternative runs that you wish were just the ongoing continuity?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love the absolute stuff. They're doing some really fun stuff with that. The problem is with making them the ongoing. Well, I mean, eventually we'd go back. So, yeah, I don't know. What they're doing, Wonder Woman's unbelievable. I love the Superman's never felt so fresh. And the absolute Batman is just hysterical. Like, it's just so fun and over the top. Just this fucking hulked out Batman. I can't get enough of it.
I mean, I think an example of this that I think DC is doing, they're just keeping it going, is the DC versus Vampire stuff. Is basically an ultimate style Elseworldsy run that they are just keeping going. And I love that. I wish they could go through. I want an Elseworlds series that just takes some of the great Elseworlds from the past and just like.
Well, but you. Them. But the question is, ultimate or absolute that you would want in the main continuity? So, like, absolute Superman replaces Superman in DC Comics. That is the Superman.
Try to change the question, Justin.
Well, the question to me is just tough because, like, that's not, there's a reason why it was always moved there. So I don't know.
Well, let me throw a kind of sideways thing to you that I've been sort of thinking around anyway, given obviously we don't have exact sales figures, but just based on the ones that I look at, which is a small sampling of stores, they Ultimate and Absolute is outselling everything else. Like sometimes X-Men pops up its head, but for the most part, the top of the sales chart since Absolute debuted is all Absolute and Ultimate, and that's pretty much it. So the thing that I was wondering about is, like, would there be a point when they'd say, you know what, these are outselling everything else by 50,000 copies, let's just make this the main line? And I think the answer is no. I don't think that would ever happen for a variety of reasons. But what do you guys think? Just like from a critical perspective, from a creative perspective, is that something that you would want to happen?
Well, I just think keep it going, because I don't think Absolute or Ultimate works without bouncing off the main continuity. So, like, to just replace it feels like then it just seems strange as a forever thing. But letting these, that's why I mentioned DC versus Vampires, because it's being allowed to be in parallel and just building its own story that is ongoing. And I just want more of that. I think we're all capable of dipping in and out of continuities way more than in the past.
All right, there we go. That's it for your audience questions. And now it is time for our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, you want to go to a comic book shop, get some comic books. So we just need a first hand up or a hey, pick me, and you'll win $25 to Midtown Comics Online.
We got Goody Squeegee.
Hey, the best of all the squeegees, Goody.
Man.
Sorry, Hartford. Next time,
come
maybe.
Back, Hartford. Yeah. Keep Connecticut. Keep that Charter Oak going strong.
Next time, Hartford. Whoa. Next time.
Oh, okay, Mr. Inspector Gadget there.
Wrong character, but I'll allow it. All right.
No, you were the villain from Inspector Gadget.
Yes, I'm not Inspector Gadget. I'm Dr. Claw.
Yeah, Dr. Claw.
Was the name of the organization Mask from that?
No, Mask is the cartoon.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know that too.
Great. We know cartoons. Why don't you take it away with Trivia Pete?
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you. Thank you for teeing that up. Today's trivia is about Old Man Logan and a small nod to the legend, Jules Pfeiffer. R.I.P. Pfeiffer, shout out to the Village Voice comic strip. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Old Man Logan was so popular, he started popping up all over. Get it popping? Claws. In Venomverse, who did Old Man Venom fight? Was it A, Spider Bitch? B, shouldn't say that. Speaking of diss tracks, Kendrick's not like us. I mean, sucks to be. Hey, Ken, what's your first name or your full name? C, Ken Drake.
Whoa, that was a roller coaster.
Yeah,
I looked it up. It's the organization from the Dr. Claw ran was an evil crime syndicate called MAD.
MAD, that's what it was. Yes, okay. A is correct. All right, nice. Here we go. Question number two. Old Man Logan even had a cameo in blank. Is it A, Deadpool and Wolverine, B, Happy Feet, or C, Vaclav Bedrich? Which is just a fun name to say, Vaclav Bedrich. I've always wanted to be Bedrich, you know what I mean?
And you're just bed poor.
Yeah, unfortunately. Have that great. Enough money to get that sick bed, you know what I mean?
Oh, so like specifically a bed? I thought Bedrich would be like you were sleeping on money.
Oh, like a Scrooge McDuck? A is correct, yes.
No, swims in money.
He swims in money. And what do you think is a great bed? Like just a water bed? What's an opulent bed?
Oh, I think you got to get that kind of like that cushiony cloud stuff on the top. You know what I mean? Get like that soft top, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think that's on most mattresses now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's been
a minute. Where do you sleep nowadays? A gulag, is it?
Yeah. Mainly on barrels. All right, here we go. Last
in
one.
Barrels?
Oh, man, Logan first appeared in which team book? Is it A, Fantastic Four, B, cool name, you related to the amazing comic book writer? No? How about the Pretzel Company? What? Neither. Now I know what the L stands for. C, William L. Snyder.
Wow. Do we have to put, who's editing these? Who's the editor-in-chief on this?
I guess you are? I don't know. Oh.
Uh-oh, I'm asleep at the switch.
Yeah, you are.
Well, let's see what the answer is. I'm going to assume it's the right one.
Hey, yes, correct. Yeah,
anyone picking B is courting insanity.
Although I would have accepted B for the second one, since Hugh Jackman did do a voice on Happy Feet.
Well, congratulations to Goody Squeegee. You have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email and we'll get that to you. And Pete, what's the secret movie?
Well, of course, we're talking about the 1961 Oscar-winning short, Monroe.
Thank you.
Nice.
Yes.
I would pay anyone $1,000 if they've seen that or even know someone who's seen
it. Oh, to our comments or just to us? Because if you do it to our comments, 100% you're going to end up owing Schoikler.
Yeah, Schoikler's seen it. How have you? Come on, man. You've seen it.
Yeah. No, definitely. That made sense as a thing to build your trivia around.
Well, anyway, as we all know, new comic books are coming out tomorrow. What are you guys looking forward to that's coming out, Pete?
Oh, man, so many great stuff. I tell you what I'm looking forward to, Absolute Batman, speaking of our Absolute talk, number 5. And then Welcome to Maynard, number 3.
Oh.
I love what a nice, refreshing staple it's become in my pull list. Like, it's just been, every time I go to it, it's not this dark, fucking scary, people ripping off skin and eating each other. It's just this fun, magical book that is just, it's just consistent, and I fucking love it, man.
I'm looking forward to Skin Rippers number 27, which is just what I want.
27? I thought it peaked after 23, but all right.
No, they got more skin to rip. I have nothing to do with it. I got a few to shout out. I want to shout out Bug Wars number 1. Very fun comic that we actually have read because we interviewed Jason Aaron and Mahmoud Asrar Veteran artist on this.
Yes, and we're going to have a podcast that will go up tomorrow, probably about midday, with a full spoiler interview.
Wow, that plug worked out really well.
Yeah, huge coincidence.
Well, huge coincidence, coordinated, Dick. Guys. Do you guys have separate meetings without me?
Yes, and we have for years. I'm also looking forward to what I teased earlier, DC vs. Vampires, World War V, Darkness and Light number one. I've just been loving everything that's happening with this little side continuity, and it started out like a wild, all over the place, characters everywhere, but it's just, Rosenberg is just doing a great job at bringing it all together, Bergie. And I can't believe now I do that. I can't believe I now do that. I've been ruined by Pete. I also just want to say Aquaman number two, by Jeremy Adams from DC. The first issue, I love the way it ended, and I'm really excited for it. Feels like such an open door, literally, to adventure that I think is perfect for this character. I actually have a lot of other books I'm looking forward to. But I'll say no more for now.
Okay. Yeah, I will give a shout out. I feel like the big one coming out tomorrow is One World Under Doom, which is kicking off their, I believe, 9-month long event for Marvel. So that should be interesting. It's
give them a movie already.
Ryan North, who I love, so I'm excited about that. But I am nervous about like Doom overload, so I'm curious to see how this whole thing goes. Also, it is once again Kyle Starks Wednesday, my favorite Wednesday of the month, where we get two titles from Dark Horse from Kyle Starks. But I like both of them. Where Monsters Lie, Cul-de-sac, final issue of that, which is just a bunch of skin ripping and people eating, just the way it is, actually, just the way you like it, with a bunch of mystical superhero serial killers killing each other in a cul-de-sac. And then the other one is
Party at the Sack
is, wait, I always blank on the title, Those Not Afraid, which is also about serial killers from Kyle Starks, but this one is about two serial killers competing to have the highest kill in a kill
more skin ripping.
Win in a small town, more skin ripping. Yes. And that first issue was messed up and great. So
was great.
Excited to see what happens in the next
also
one.
Magic number two and Cable Love and Chrome number two. Man, I love those first issues.
Woo! Big Wednesday, and all of those books and many more are going to be in our Stack podcast that debuts Wednesday 9 a.m. both in the Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show.
Yeah.
A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Tom Stagoski for coming on to talk about Herculoids. That's coming out February 19th from Dynamite. Also, Brianna Lowenson for talking about Raised by Ghosts, which is out right now from Fantagraphics. Next week on the show, Chris, Doc Wyatt, and Luke Arnold are going to be here to talk about Essentials. And Jay Stevens will be back on the show to talk about Red Sonja Attacks Mars. Comic Book Club News, our daily news show, Monday through Friday, every morning. Podvincible, our Invincible recap show, is back, working our way through that. Marvel Vision is currently recapping Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, so check that out as well. Patreon.com/comicbookclub, where you can get an ad-free version of all the podcasts we do. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Good night. Comic Book Club, Comic Book Club. They sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they let that special guest speak. So grab your grin.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great night.
Hint for the other sequel quizzes, talk about the other two hosts.
Uh-oh.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.